Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
As we say, there's no money for education. There's no money for health care. There's no money for jobs back here at home. There's no money for public transportation. We've got to take that money out of endless war. We've got to convert the military-industrial complex and stop funding these insanities. The military is the biggest polluter in the world, but we don't hear the environmental community talk much about that. We all need to put the military front and center on the agenda because, again, it's the military arm of corporate globalization.
That's the voice of longtime organizer and activist Bruce Gagnon from the Global Network. And this week's show, we speak to Bruce about the critical struggle the South Koreans are involved in trying to stop a U.S. military base on Jeju Island. Bruce speaks to the global importance of this issue and how this issue makes the connections of militarism, corporatism, and globalization. So stay tuned. I'm very privileged to have on the line Bruce Gagnon. He's a longtime activist and organizer, anti-war protester. He's coordinator currently of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Thank you.
Now, currently, there's a lot of controversy over Jeju Island. We hear a lot about what's happening in North Korea, but very little about what's happening in the South Korean peninsula. Tell us a little bit about Jeju Island in South Korea and what's happening around there.
Jeju is just south of the Korean peninsula. It's an island, very independent island, but controlled by the South Korean government. And it is in a very strategic location. The southern end of the island is only 300 miles from the Chinese mainland. Obama has recently announced his pivot of foreign and military policy to the Asia-Pacific. The U.S. is doubling its military presence in the region, so it needs more ports of call for the Navy. And so the U.S. is twisting the arm of the South Korean government to build a Navy base on Jeju Island, which is a pristine environmental treasure. It has three UNESCO-recognized environmental sacred sites on the on and off the island, one of them being just off the coast of Gangjeon Village on the southern end of the island. And it's here that the Navy base is now being constructed. The U.S. is going to bring its Aegis destroyer warships outfitted with missile defense systems into this island, aircraft carriers and submarines, nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, nuclear-powered submarines, in the years to come. And the villagers, 450-year-old fishing and farming community, are fighting against this and have been doing so for years. And now people are flocking there from all over the world to join them and support them. They asked us to hold our international meeting there this year. We just did a few weeks ago in late February. And some of our members were arrested for crawling under razor wire on the sacred rocky coastline that they call Gurumbi. We crawled under the razor wire, were arrested and taken to jail. And since I've been home, I've been raising money to send more people, and now we have three members from Veterans for Peace in the U.S. that are going to go next week, three leaders of Veterans for Peace, to go to bring the support of their organization to this island, these embattled people. You can learn a lot more about this whole thing if you go to my blog, where I'm posting daily videos and pictures of the protests there on Jeju Island. It's a fascinating and heartbreaking story. My blog is called Organizing Notes. Just Google that with my name, Organizing Notes, and you'll find it.
What are the strategic goals of the United States for destroying this beautiful place? What is their aim and what is their strategy in doing this?
Well, we see Jeju Island as a spark in the coming dangerous and expensive superpower confrontation that is now developing between the U.S. and its military alliance, NATO, and China. The intent is to really fully submerge China under corporate globalization And so this base is one part of this coastal encirclement of China and inland encirclement, if you think about the permanent U.S. bases that are being built in Afghanistan and that part of Central Asia. So the U.S. is now surrounding China, and these missile defense systems on board these Aegis destroyers are part of U.S. first strike planning, where you hit them first, try to take out their nuclear capability, they then try to fire their remaining nuclear missiles, and you take them out with your missile defense system, sort of the sword and the shield working together. And the U.S. basically wants to be able to blockade China's importation of oil. China imports 60% of its oil on ships, and if the U.S. can essentially then blockade China's ability to bring that oil into the country, then the United States will hold the keys to China's economic engine. And so this very insane, very dangerous, very deadly, provocative, and expensive strategy is underway. And the Canadian government is obviously allied to the U.S. in this whole program. We're asking people all over the world to look up in their phone book or Google on the Internet and find the nearest South Korean government embassy or consulate near you and to call them and to say, no Navy base on Jeju Island. And we have people all over the world doing this now. We're trying to show the world that people care about this place. Just off the coast of the island sit endangered soft coral reefs that are going to be destroyed as the seabed is now being dredged to make it deeper so the U.S. can bring its warships into the port that they're building on Jeju Island. The cement, the sacred cement coastline that people have preyed on for 450 years, as long as that village has existed, is going to be covered in cement. The endangered red crabs that live within the rocks and the other sea life, the plant life, is going to be buried alive under that cement. We've just learned, as they did the first blast of the rocky coastline to prepare it for, because they want to even it out to lay the cement. As they just did that first blast, they discovered fresh water bubbling up under the rocks, which is essentially the water aquifer that feeds the entire southern tip of Jeju Island. So this is now becoming a big story there. So it's an environmental disaster, it's a peace disaster, it's a human tragedy, as the villagers have now fighting 12, 14, 16 hours a day against the police trying to blockade the cement trucks, the construction vehicles. They're going to jail in record numbers. And one of their members, one of their villagers, a professor by the name of Yang, Yun Mo, is now on his 32nd, I believe it is, day of hunger striking in jail. Last summer, he hunger struck for 71 days and almost died. And the only reason why he started eating again was that the island Catholic bishop talked him into eating. But this time, he vows that he will not resume eating until this base is shut down. So it's very likely that he will die the way things are looking now. Myself, I'm on my seventh day of fasting in solidarity with him, and we've been urging people around the world to do that as well. So, again, please go to the blog Organizing Notes where we report on all of this in a kind of blow-by-blow way.
This is quite stunning to hear the resistance articulated in such a way, and even yourself, I commend you for standing in solidarity. Now, the question I have is, this is quite provocative to China, as you pointed out. Have they had a response in China towards this action? Has there been any negotiation or anything on that front?
China has not specifically mentioned Jeju Island, but they have over and over again been, in a much broader terms, been talking about the U.S. military buildup in the Asia-Pacific region, saying that it's dangerous, it's destabilizing. Just a few years ago, the CIA was saying China's not spending a great deal of money on the military because they're trying to, you know, deal with their huge population, trying to feed people and house people and everything else. But in just the last two or three years, China's begun to build up their military in response because, again, they're so reliant on importation of oil by the sea. Again, 60% of their oil comes on ships, that they fear that what the U.S. is now doing is creating this, in a sense, pirate capability to be able to hijack or blockade China's importation of oil. And if the U.S. could just cut them off for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, as sort of a threat, you don't even have to invade. You know, you could just cut them off, and then the Chinese economy would suffer and be under the control of the U.S. and NATO, who is also a partner in this whole expansion. So China is very aware of it, and they're talking about it in general terms, and they're increasing their military spending, which is now just essentially adding fuel to this fire of an arms race in that region.
I remember when Obama was elected president, we were all happy to see the end of George Bush. Were there any allies within the Obama administration?
No, the Obama administration and the Democratic Party are totally complicit in all of this. We just have to really come to sort of a reconciliation of reality where we understand that the corporate oligarchy runs our government in the United States, runs the government in Canada. We increasingly see Canadian government becoming more and more militarized, Lockheed Martin doing massive things in Canada, Canada increasingly becoming involved in the U.S. hot wars around the world. So, you know, all of our governments, the South Korean government, is controlled by corporations, by the big corporations, the Samsung, who probably many of the listeners have phones from, is the lead contractor on this whole project. We're asking people to stop buying Samsung products. And when you call the Korean embassy or consulate there in your community, tell them that you're not going to buy Samsung until this base gets shut down. So, you know, all of our governments around the world now are being taken over by these corporations. It's corporate globalization on steroids, with the military as its arm to control resource allocation in this time of declining resources. That's what it's all about. That's what foreign and military policy is all about. And anybody that gets in the way, they're going to try to roll over. So we, the people, the 99%, if you will, need to stand up and put these pieces together and link all these issues in our public articulation. As we say, there's no money for education. There's no money for health care. There's no money for jobs back here at home. There's no money for public transportation. We've got to take that money out of endless war. We've got to convert the military-industrial complex and stop funding these insanities. The military is the biggest polluter in the world, but we don't hear the environmental community talk much about that. We all need to put the military front and center on the agenda because, again, it's the military arm of corporate globalization.
It's quite stunning, as you point out, how governments are complicit in some of these things, just ignoring the will of their populations. In Vancouver here, we're celebrating that we have a contract to build more warships, and I'm thinking, well, we need to replace our ferries. Why the hell are we building warships? And we shouldn't be celebrating this decision. And there's Stephen Harper in China selling Canada's tar sand oil when 83% of British Columbians, all First Nations, are against it. It seems that they just feel they can push ahead. So when people hear these kinds of impunity by governments, what does it boil down to? What can people on a personal level do to take back their democracy, to reorganize and to reconstitute power?
You know, I've been encouraging people all over the world to discuss locally sending a delegation to Jeju Island in South Korea immediately, because I have never in my life as an organizer, and I've been a full-time organizer since 1978, never have I ever seen a community of people more dedicated, more absolutely on the ball than these people on Jeju Island and Korea in general. Korean activists are unlike any that we've ever seen. And the reason why they're so special is because for many years, for more than 40 years, the Koreans were under the control of the Japanese imperial fascists. And so they learned what fascism was. They learned to live under the national security law that was created by the Japanese that would arbitrarily throw people in jail or kill them. Then after the war, after the United States defeated Japan, the United States took over of Korea. And in charge, they put in the former collaborators, the Koreans who collaborated with the Japanese occupation, the elite, the oligarchy. They put them in, U.S. put them in charge, and they've been running the country ever since. And so there's, since World War II, there's been a series of right-wing dictatorships, and today the government of President Lee is a corporate stooge, a corporate lackey, a corporate puppet. And in Korea, he has a nickname. They call him the Bulldozer, because he's doing all these tremendous projects, like the XL pipeline. They're doing a Four Rivers, they call restoration, in South Korea, where four rivers connect, and they're going in and just destroying them all with this massive project that they're doing. It's just big money for the corporations, the development corporations, just as this base is. And so the Korean people now have been fighting this stuff for years and years and years. And the national security law that existed under the imperial fascist Japanese still exists today in the South Korean government, and it's used to arrest activists for speaking out against U.S. bases or calling for the reconciliation between North and South Korea. That's a crime in South Korea. And so activists and organizations are raided all the time there. And recently, one of the organizations that's been on the lead on this campaign around Jeju Island on the mainland of South Korea, was their offices were broken into by the Korean CIA. Their computers were seized. People were arrested because they're advocating for the people fighting against this Navy base that's going to benefit the United States military. So those people are teaching us all about resistance against fascism. And this is what we are facing now in the United States and what you're facing in Canada. Corporate oligarchy, corporate fascism, three-piece suit version. Doesn't look like Hitler. It looks more like Wall Street. And so this is what we're up against. And so the Korean people, that's why this struggle is so, so important. This local struggle is strategic for the entire global movement, I believe, because, again, it defends the environment. It makes the connection to defending a people who have been on the land, fishing and farming people, simple people who have been doing the land no harm, who have cherished it, nurtured it, just like indigenous people do. And it's an issue of fundamental peace in the world. So we need to get people around this and get their heads around this issue so that they begin to see that what happens in Jeju Island is connected to what's going on in Canada, what's connected to what's going on in the U.S. and all over the world. So again, I urge people to go to my blog, Organizing Notes. You'll see the whole range of videos and pictures and stories about what's happening in Jeju Island today.
Behind all the violence, behind all the devastation and the abuse is the dirty secret that we are consuming way beyond the carrying capacity of this planet. And I don't think it's making us any happier or any better off. Can you talk a little bit about personally what people can do in being mindful of the damage they're creating by their consumption?
Well, Stuart, that's a really important point you just made. I think a key point, because in the end, we are all linked to this consumer materialistic society that has no values. Today on my blog, I ended it by kind of a heartfelt lament. There's this Father Moon, this Catholic priest. He must be in his 80s. He's been there in Jeju now for about a year, and bringing other Catholic priests and nuns there. And he's one of the most famous priests in all of South Korea, because about 40% of the people there are Catholic. And he's pictured in this paper. The police ripped his shirt off him and as he's trying to blockade the entrance. And he is always talking about this spiritual disconnection between our Mother Earth and these corporations that are just out to destroy it. And he's calling on each of us to do what we can to change the way we live, to change the way we set our own priorities. What's more important, defending the Mother Earth so that the future generations can live, or getting the best car or the best business card so that we can brag about what kind of job we have when we graduate from college? I mean, you know, really, let's look at the key priorities. And it's those that are beginning to reorder their priorities that are the leaders around the world today in these movements to protect the possibility for life on this planet in the future. So, you know, we all can give up, walk away, turn our heads away, or we can stand and face the music. It's a choice each of us has to make. You know, I live in an intentional community. Several of us sold our houses and we moved into a big house together where we reduced our need and our impact on the planet. We grow food together. We're trying to change the way we live and the way we act and the way we talk about all of this, make all of these things more consonant with each other.
Well, I thank you for spending some time with us this morning and your long activism and struggle in bringing this to our attention, because we hear a lot about North Korea, but we certainly don't hear a lot about the struggles of the people there in South Korea against the impunity of which their government is acting. So remind us again, Bruce, how people can get in touch with you, your blog, and get involved in this.
Yep, my blog is called Organizing Notes. If you just Google that, and along with my name, I'm sure you'll find it. And again, it's giving daily reports, videos, photos, articles about what's happening there in Jeju Island and about the other key issues that we're concerned about today. Clearly, we see our government, your government, most of the governments around the world under the control of corporate globalization, and they're draining the budgets, they're moving the money in the military to create this global military alliance under the guise of NATO, and to be used to control the declining resources around the world. That's where the issues are now. That's where we're headed. And so it's literally return us to feudalism, return us to a time where we work practically for nothing, where we don't have health care, we don't have public education anymore. It's getting that dire so that these corporations can control the oil, the natural gas, the water, the remaining mineral resources on the African continent. That's what it's all about today.
It's also subsidized by us. In a time of recession, the military machine, the cost of war, the cost to the environment is all socialized to us. So we are all connected, and I thank you again, Bruce, for spending some time with us this morning.
Okay, thanks, Stuart. Good luck to you.
That was Bruce Gagnon from the Global Network. To find his website, once again, just type in Organizing Notes in any search engine, and you'll find it in short order. And at the same time, we can dispel this mythology that we can have infinite growth on a finite planet. And he's right. We do need to reclaim our democracies. We do need to put our governments on a rational course and stop this trend of using militarism to secure cheap resources or to deny others resources. To put it all in perspective, I'm going to leave you with a clip from Noam Chomsky. Bye for now.
Modern industrial civilization has developed within a certain system of convenient myths. The driving force of modern industrial civilization has been individual material gain, which is accepted as legitimate, even praiseworthy, on the grounds that private vices yield public benefits in the classic formulation. Now, it's long been understood very well that a society that is based on this principle will destroy itself in time. It can only persist with whatever suffering and injustice it entails, as long as it's possible to pretend that the destructive forces that humans create are limited, that the world is an infinite resource, and that the world is an infinite garbage can. At this stage of history, either one of two things is possible. Either the general population will take control of its own destiny and will concern itself with community interests, guided by values of solidarity and sympathy and concern for others, or alternatively, there will be no destiny for anyone to control. As long as some specialized class is in a position of authority, it is going to set policy in the special interests that it serves. But the conditions of survival, let alone justice, require rational social planning in the interests of the community as a whole, and by now that means the global community. The question is whether privileged elites should dominate mass communication and should use this power as they tell us they must, namely to impose necessary illusions, to manipulate and deceive the stupid majority and remove them from the public arena. The question, in brief, is whether democracy and freedom are values to be preserved or threats to be avoided. In this possibly terminal phase of human existence, democracy and freedom are more than values to be treasured. They may well be essential to survival. Thank you.
Superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.